Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
Okay, so this is the first iteration of the Revere Asset Your Money radio show where you get to see video. And this is all out of necessity as we were going to use our social distancing skills and just do kind of a phone call and tape, but that wasn't good enough in my mind. So Danny and I tested out the old GoToMeeting and we realized, wow, I look really good on video and Danny's just there. So he said, we can probably pull this off. So what we wanted to do is show you me, because I am handsome, let you know that Danny is alive, and then there's the portfolio extraordinaire right here, if you can see him. This is, as I pull out the John Mantell Illustrator, there's Don Vandenborg from wonderful St. Augustine, Florida. So we thought, you know what, this might become a staple, and in addition, you get to see the charts here. And so what we've got up here right now is the S&Ps. We're going to use those to try to illustrate what we're talking about during the show. I will try to read the facial expressions of my cohorts here to drive the show. And then hopefully this doesn't just end up in a spontaneous combustible ball where the wheels fall off and we explode and die. So with that, oh, is that my phone? No, that was Danny's phone. I'm going with that one. That was Don's phone. See, easy. It's easy to do this.
I put mine on.
What I want to do. Did you? Nice. What I want to do, longtime viewers know this is the banter that goes on before the show. But what I want to do is, because we're going to get into some heavy topics here. So what I want to do before everything is I want to bring you a moment of joy. Now, Don, if you go to at D Vandenborg, and so Don's Twitter feed is at D Vandenborg, and then you can just spell it Vandenborg, has a lot of good animal stuff on his Twitter feed. Danny has some stuff on his Twitter feed. Me, I choose to bring you joy during this pretty rough period for a lot of folks. I choose to bring you joy by bringing you my son running. Yep. And so this is the moment of joy that I typically bring my Twitter followers, oh, at least once a day. Danny, have you seen this one?
Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah. So this is the Remster running. Hopefully this sets the tone for the show.
And I like how he cuts smile. You off here like he's NASCAR trained. At the
That's old.
When you started catching up, he pulled in front of you. That was
old goggles Paisan over here. He knows what he's doing. So that's the Remster. That's a little bit of joy. He loves it. I love it. It's like you got to take him out. We're all quarantined here at the house. And so this gets us and sets the stage here for what I really want to show you on Twitter here today is this. And I'll let you read this, Stock Nerds and Market Lovers. By the way, where are my manners as you're reading that? I introduced Dan, I introduced Tom, but I didn't tell you how to get hold of us. It's 732-5932, 855-732-5932. One Danny Stewart on Twitter, at D Vandenborg. Dan at Revere Asset, Don at Revere Asset, and I'm Tim at Revere Asset. And this tweet is really emblematic of the market we're in and the foolishness that's pervading the markets right now. And I bring this up because there is a number of you, there is just a number of you that are home for the first time in a long time, and you're able to follow the markets, and you're able to look at the markets and watch CNBC or watch Bloomberg or take in a bunch of Twitter during your workday. And this is really troublesome that a prominent media figure here, Josh Brown, talks about stocks individually. And I've heard him actually say, I bought some Starbucks, and maybe he means for himself. But then he's telling MarketWatch, and this is from MarketWatch, and if you ever want my sources, you can have them. We're not smart enough to pick stocks. We have no edge. This is the stuff that you're not seeing on TV. And no one's telling you this stuff. And then Josh is the first person to tell you, I'm a big fat idiot. And if I tell you something about a stock on CNBC and you run out and buy it, you're an idiot. Yeah, but he doesn't say that beforehand, that you're an idiot for following my thought process. I mean, we always tell you that, you know, these videos and these podcasts are for your edification purposes only. They're never, ever to be misconstrued as advice. If you want advice, if you need advice, if you seek advice, all you have to do is, in fact, give us a call. But that seems like it's what the hell are you doing on TV then? You know, like, are you following, what's the strategy? And so it's almost like it's someone trying to be transparent, except it's a disguise and it's just a big illusion. And that's frustrating to me very much, because I know that stock nerds follow, they follow people. And kudos to Josh for working his way to whatever position he's in on life. But, you know, telling people, you know, so emphatically that, you know, like Starbucks is the one I remember, as if I can pull my charts up here, which are really not responding with all the video feed I'm doing here. But telling, oh, there it is. Is that Starbucks? God, is that really what the chart looks like after the sell-off? It's disingenuous at best, and it's heinous at worst, where you believe these people to be truthful. You believe them to be vetted. Well, you know, and the cynic can say, well, they're on TV. Why are you going to believe them? Why are you going to follow them? I get that. But they're there to provide a service and provide comfort and provide advice. And this here is just so – it's my whole problem with this investment community that resides on TV, the tele-advisors. And I'm really frustrated by that. And I was wondering, Danny and Don, what your thoughts are on that as we as we progress through the show here. We'll get the strategy, stock nerds. We'll get to everything that we did. I'll cover Luck and Coffee. We owned Luck and Coffee in the shop. If you haven't seen that video and what we did with that, we'll talk about that here in a few minutes. But Danny, I'll open it up to you, and I'm actually going to throw it to Don, because for the first time I'm looking at Don while I do this, and if I don't throw it to him, I fear that he'll give me an angry face.
I don't appreciate what any asset allocation asset manager does in any way, shape, or form that never has a sell strategy. You guys know that very well. When you go on TV to pretend that you're something that you're not, which is what they're doing in this place, in this instance, unless you read this article that says, hey, that's just for show business that I go on and pick stocks, the whole thing just reeks of not being fair with your clients, not being truthful with your clients. You know, there have been times over the last couple of, let me be clear. First of all, I'm blocked by both of them, Josh and Barry. And it's because I
call them out.
Asked them about some sort of a sell strategy. What, you know, every time they're saying, oh, every pullback is a gift, right? Until that gift is down 35%. Every time I ask them how that strategy would have worked during 2007 to 2009, well, now we know how that strategy is working in 2020. And I got no time for that. I got no time for people not being able to sleep at night because somebody that they trusted them with their money has no answer for them except for hang in there, try to think longer term. It's ridiculous.
Well, what's interesting is I actually heard him say, and you know, and what I don't want this to be is this is not three guys in a vacuum attacking one person that can't defend themselves. To me, this is emblematic of a lot of the industry. Not all of it. That's a big blanket to throw, but it's a lot of it. And I heard him say, we manage money tactically and strategically. That's a quote. And he actually said that Friday. And I thought, what the hell does that even mean? Because if you have, those are things that you say without explanation when you're trapped people, you've trapped people down 25, 30%. And it's not right. And so the only thing, stock nerds, I think that you want to do in this environment is understand that you need rules to get in, to get out. And so let me explain. I talked about Luckin Coffee. So we didn't own Luckin Coffee through a 75% decline on Thursday. We bought Luckin Coffee, and it was a stock and ETF portfolio. It wasn't Don. Don was smart enough not to follow me into this. And here is March 4th. And this is the way I want to buy stocks. I want to buy stocks that are coming off the mean or the 20, this pink line, this 21 exponential moving average. And so it met my criteria for ownership. We're about a 70% fundamental and 30% technical shop when it comes to our buy rules. Now, look, this is before we knew everything was fake. Okay. So just keep that in mind. And so when you're looking here, this stock actually accelerates, breaks it. It's like, oh, it's doing what I thought it would do. And then the market gets tough. We ended up selling it at 3.6, just 2 days later. I ended up taking a little bit over a 4% loss in this. And Don will remind me of this when I drift, when I stray from my rules. And everyone is prone to want to stray from the rules. It's, you're human. And Don will say, you know, Tim, you'll always say, Don will do it real casually to me. He'll go, you know, you always say, Tim, that your first opportunity is your best opportunity to sell. And I think that's Don's gentle reminder of stick to your rules. And so this market has just been so, so incredibly unforgiving that, yeah, we sold right here. And did I know it was going to do this? And did I know? Of course, I didn't know that. But I didn't have to worry about it. But when you talk to people, like when people on TV are telling you that you need to be Shaq's not going out of business, Shake Shack Burger, and you want to just, I mean, you got to put this on a weekly chart to see the destruction, you know, and now all the people that told you, you know, to buy Shaq or to buy Starbucks, now it's a different story out of those folks. I mean, you're talking, look at this, you're talking 105 to 34. This is ridiculous. And there's no reason why you'd have to do this. And if a daily chart's not your forte, you can come up here onto a weekly time frame and you can take a bigger time frame. You know, but for folks to tell you that you can't time your exit out of things, it's not timing, it's rules and it's risk parameters. You don't have to suffer. There's no, you don't have, like if this thing breaks, this is a 10 week right here. 50 day or a 10 week, this line, this red line right here. Well, okay, well, it broke that line, I'm out. And you would never have to worry about it again. You'd even be ahead, you know, from where you are right now if you sold at the 40 week and just gave up on it. But what happens is in this market and the investor psychology right now of this market is, okay, you're the investor that, you know, you're the person that bought, and let's get this on a daily chart, that bought Zoom at 164. And now you don't know what to do. See, somebody bought Zoom up here. Somebody bought Zoom at 164.94. Now they don't know what to do because they can't understand it. They're new at home. They unfortunately turned on CNBC. They look at Facebook. It's all the Zoom memes. Is it memes or memes?
Memes.
Memes. It's memes. They're looking at all the Zoom memes on their Facebook feeds and they buy it because it makes sense to buy it. But now you've got this shift in trend, two closes below the 21, potentially on a Friday afternoon at 218. No guarantee, by the way, that Zoom is going to reassert itself back up to 165. There's just, because it's a market and anything can happen, there's just zero guarantee that any of this is going to go back up. But because of where you are in time and space right now, the ambiguity looms large. And so what I'm going to ask Don to do right now, I want people to have, we have so many new listeners and viewers to our videos and our podcasts. I want Don to cover, Don, what do you think? Can you do your top three sell rules here in a second as I set this up?
Sure. Let's talk about.
Just give, Give me 1 second. Let me set it up, and I'm gonna pass it to you. This is what I normally would do on the phone. Then Danny, you'll clean up the mess that Don and I create real quick. So, so what I'm looking at here with the S&Ps, where investors are right now. You've heard everybody tell you that it was an opportunity, that prices haven't been this low, and this is a generational buy. And look, it's a market. They may be right. But what if we're actually in the midst of October of 08? You're in October of 2008. The market, and I'm roughly saying here from 1 January to the middle October, you're down 25%. You know the market went on to lose about 26, 27 more percent from that point in time. But how many people told you the banks were an opportunity? Real estate was an opportunity, that the market's coming back, the economy's not in trouble. It got a flesh wound. Right now, there's a bunch of stockners that have followed the tele-advisors on TV and on Twitter, and they're shocked. They're shell-shocked, and they don't quite understand what to do right now, because if they sell on Monday and the market goes on a 10% rally, they feel dumb. If they sell, or if they buy more because they told it was an opportunity, the market goes lower, they feel dumb. They don't know what to do. Do you add to losers? And it's the people with the 401ks and IRAs, and they always tell you this, the people in this industry are so disingenuous, because if you take your money from them, they don't have a job. But have they earned a job? Have they earned your money? Have they done enough other than give you platitudes to warrant you still doing business with them? And so, Don, let's do this. Three top sell rules and the question that everyone should ask that has a money manager and stockholders and market lovers. I know it's not you. It's your parents and your friends and your loved ones that are suffering this. And this is the video, the podcast. We want you desperately to send to them because they deserve better than what they're getting. Go ahead, Don. I'm sorry.
Let's use live examples since you've got a chart up in front of you.
Yeah.
And I've owned Luckin Coffee three or four times over the last, since going back to the beginning of December. So let's talk about the first buy that I did. Can you find December 3rd on that chart of Luckin Coffee?
You bet I can. Let me hover over it and I'll mark it on the chart.
No, I like this interactive.
I do too, actually. I'm kind of glad we're doing it because this is so much better than just trying to describe it. Okay, there's December 3rd, Don, of last year.
Okay. Hold on 1 second. So December 3rd, I took a 4% position on Luckin, and that would have been on a pullback after a breakout out of the base. You can see the breakout there, and then it pulled back to the 80 MA. 12.3 initial 4% position. So that's now I'm in. Let's go to 12.26, and my notes say, lock in a third, up 24%. So this is an offensive sell rule. Offensive meaning it's going up, it's extended, you've got a nice gain. Why not take some off the table and let the rest of it run? So now I'm down probably to about a 3% position since you're up 24% on the first couple, letting the rest of it run. 12.31, I sold another piece of it. My comment is it's extended, lock another portion. So this is 12.31.
Danny, are you playing with a pen over there or flipping a bottle cap?
I'm not doing anything.
Oh, that's got to be me. I'm hearing something. I can't figure out where it's coming from. I'm sorry, Don, interrupt your flow. 12.31, you locked in more gains.
So that's another example of offensive selling. Stocks, for one thing, William O'Neill, which we follow his general rules constantly, recommends locking some in between 20 and 25%. And I adhere to that. I get, there's nothing worse than seeing something up 40%. And a couple days later, you get a harsh pullback and you're down to 20%. I like to lock in gains on the way up. And then if the stock still looks good and it performs a constructive pullback and pulls back into the 21 EMA, I like to buy some of my position back. So let's see, 579. So that was another sell in LK. I bought some of it back on 1.6.
Let's do that. Now, what Don's describing, stock nerds and market lovers, is how to genuinely execute tactically and strategically. It's not hyperbole. It's not a platitude. It's actually how to handle stocks. Go ahead, Don.
So 1.6, I'm buying back. My comment is I'm buying back at 34.21, my higher sells. Mm-hmm. So I'm back to about a 5% position here. And then they did a secondary offering after hours on 1.7. And you're going to see right a here. Gap down the next morning, and I blew the rest of it out. It gapped down, although it finished the day stronger and higher, and I was kicking myself, but rules are rules. Locked in the last piece at 18% and moved on to what else was working. Yep. Now let's give you an example of a couple of buys that didn't work. 341, I got back in 341. I'm talking about lines in a spreadsheet here. That's how I'm referencing them. Don't pay any attention to those.
Oh,
so my comment on 219, I got back in when it broke above 40 resistance.
Here you go. 219 right here. Let me just double check and refresh my chart. 218, 219.
And 221, I sold it for a 4% loss. This is my comment is coronavirus fears hitting the market.
Yeah. And there I came in a couple days later thinking, huh, I've got this. And it's not like, oh, I've got this. It's like, oh, no, this is the setup I'm looking for.
Yep. And I bought it the day after you because when it broke out, you bought it very nicely off the 21. I brought it on the breakout, and that breakout promptly failed. And I took a 7% loss on it. Stop hit on 3.5, down 7.46%.
It's right in here where we took the loss. Oh, that's a sad face I just made. Didn't mean to do that. But we sold up here.
Yeah, 7.46% is a sad face until you see what could have happened if you'd have hold on to it.
Exactly. And so but stockners, this isn't just cherry picking. This just literally happened. And you don't know they're going to turn out like this. But let's talk about a real life example. So I'm going to talk about Docu, Don. So D-O-C-U. So Docu is something I bought on 326. And then we're applying the same thing that Don just talked about. And by the way, for a long time viewers of the show, you know we don't plan this beforehand. I like where Don just took it. So we're real life doing what Don just described in Luckin, except in Docu. Took a position on 326 right here. I sold it. I wish I would have caught 98. I caught 93.98. It's about a 13% gain. And now what did we do today? We let it come back to the mean and we took a small position. And it doesn't have to work out, but in this market, I think this is what you want when you're looking at the least risky, the buy points with the least amount of risk and easy stop outs. This is the mean. If all things revert back to the mean, that's the mean. So instead of buying, getting top ticked, you wait till they come back to the mean. And if it doesn't hold support, what are we going to do, Don?
We're going to punt it.
Yeah. There's just no need. No question in this market. And we've got other things to offset. We're not a long-only shop. So we have enough in the portfolio to follow the videos. By the way, you can follow those videos. Let me show you. If you want to follow the videos, just go to Daily Market Insight at revereasset.com. And so you can see, here's the We Own Luckin Coffee. Here's how we handled it. There's a class here, Stock Nerds and Market Lovers. I'm going to scroll all the way to March 18th. That we'll send you the link to this class. It's this lunch and learn class right here. This is the class that is changing investors' life. Don't pay attention to this title. Where's the bears here? What's next? This is change your life class. That's what this is. Change your life. If you listen to this class, I swear to you, you will never be beholden to tele-advisors. Anyone that has a business card that says Edwards, Jones, America, Lynch, Fargo, scummy.com, you won't ever fall prey to them. If someone says insurance on their card, annuity salesperson, if you watch this class right here, you will never, there's no way. Like we were talking on our morning call this morning, you know, what do clients pay us to do? They pay us to sell. And we're so transparent about it. Like, this is what drives me nuts. And Danny knows and Don knows it. And I probably talk to you stock nerds about it too much. This isn't transparency. Is this a lie? A wolf in sheep's clothing. Use the metaphor you like. What we do every day in these videos and in our class is we share. We give you what we're doing. We don't have anything to hide, because what gets investors oftentimes is the psychology behind investing. And look, I haven't done this yet on the picture frame here, but just call us. Look, if you ever call us, you can, like, here, I want to bring America's fiduciary into this and talk about something. If you're stuck, if you're in that in-between point, like, should I stay or should I go? Should I sell? I don't want to. They always tell me it'll come back. And you don't even know what it'll come back means. And what you don't realize is that while you're sitting in, Don, give me a laggard stock. I don't follow laggard stocks. Give me one. Bank of America. That's a laggard. While you're stuck in Bank of America, while you're stuck in something someone on TV told you was undervalued, you could be sitting in something that looks a little bit better, like Netflix. That's such a better looking chart. Or you could be in TLT, or you could be in GLD or GLDM. You could be in things that have so much more of a bullish tone and tenor to them. Well, Tim, this market's going to hell in a handbasket. This is PSQ. Which is a short. Thank you. Yeah, to balance out the portfolio. And so there's just so much more than. You don't like, well, Tim, it's McDonald's. There's no way McDonald's is going to. Does that look like a bullish chart to you? No. And so I don't care that I don't think McDonald's is going under. When someone says to you, well, they're not going to go out of business, that doesn't make it a good investment. You can. It's absolute rubbish that you have to conform to Wall Street axioms. Because all they want you to do is keep your money there. And I'll tell you something I owned back earlier winter, spring. We sold ARI, and this is going to transition Don and Danny to REITs here. Up at 16, it was 16 plus is where I sold it. And look, I loved it. It had a 10% yield, but it just had fallen. It broke my rules. I couldn't hold it any longer. Look at what the market did to it. And so it doesn't matter what your dividend yield is. There's no stock in God's green earth that you should be holding when there's no yield worth this price destruction. And this price destruction isn't limited to ARI. Don, tell me about closed-end REITs.
Non-traded REITs are there's a person that advertises them very heavily in the Jacksonville, St. Augustine area, talking about how you can solve your investment problems by getting non-traded REITs, which pay you 7 to 10%. And the tagline was, we've never lost a penny of anybody's principal. These things, once you're in them, it's like the Hotel California. You can try to check out, but you can almost never leave. They price once a year. I looked up a REIT that a client moved into us. The last time it priced was in February of 2019. Now, if they're supposed to price once a year, they're about 2 months late pricing it again. But the bottom line is you have no idea how much it's worth. You have no idea if you want to redeem it and get out of it, how much you can get for it. And all you can do is hope that they continue to pay that yield, because there's no guarantee with the value of the underlying assets going down. And if you look at ARI, which Tim just showed, that chart is what the chart of all these non-traded REITs looks like if there was transparency in pricing. That's down 75%+. Don't get into something that. And what good is a minus 75% on your principal if you're getting a 10% yield? It doesn't mean anything. Net, net, you are a major loser in this.
Can we dispel today, finally? And Danny, I want you to come in and tell people how you try to get them out of these things and how to avoid them and how to pick up on the signs that you actually have one of these nonsensical things in your portfolio. Because a lot of people's parents don't realize they got stuck with these. I want to put to bed forever that there's no such thing as getting paid to wait. And there's nothing.
Well, that's number one. That's why we always use liquid, highly liquid traded investments so that you can get in if things turn around. Look, let's be honest, these things were great for years while it was an orderly market and everything was fine. It's when it hits the fan that you can't get out. And it goes back to your thing you were just saying a second ago about, you know, why would you own those companies, McDonald's? Cash is an asset class, people. You don't have to be doing something all the time, meaning you don't have to be invested. Sometimes doing nothing and covering up is doing something. You don't make money evenly. There's times you make good money, and then there's times you got to be defensive. Because if you're not defensive, you give up all the money you made during the good times. These REITs are illiquid, and now a lot of them may not be around in next year or the year after because there's so many foreclosed people aren't paying their rents. They're out of business. I mean, until this thing gets resolved, and the problem is you don't have liquidity. But we had a client come in a couple years ago. She inherited some private REITs from her parents. And I told her, I said, look, if it were me, I'd get out of these because by the time you find out that you're in trouble, you can't get out of them. And so you got to submit the paperwork to redeem them. You can only redeem them back from the company. I mean, there's an exchange in Chicago that will sell limited partnerships on a secondary exchange, but they know it's a distressed sale, so they give you a 30% haircut, roughly. So you're really the only way to get your money back until they mature, until they pay out. You're made to hold them for the time period, whether it's 8 years, 10 years, or what have you, and then they end up self-liquidating. Well, in between that time, if something happens, you can't do anything. And so I told her, and she, you know, and she got out of them. And now, thank God she did. And I've got another guy that called me just about a month ago, has that same family of REITs. They sell them in series. So they fill up one group and then they roll another one every 6 months. And he called me and said, what do you think about this? And this was right a little bit into the coronavirus. I said, you need to submit that paperwork right now, because you got to submit it a couple weeks before the quarter end. And then you're lucky if they don't push it back to the next quarter and they get to kind of determine what the price is based on the valuation. They only have to value them once a year. And so, but that doesn't mean they have a decline in value. That just means that's the annual value. Now, if it's your home and you get utility out of it and it goes down in value, well, you know, that's a different story. I live here, my kids, you know, my dog, family, I use it. It's utility. But if it's an investment, you know, I'm not married to any investment. It's just a trading chip for me to get the things that I want, to buy healthcare, to buy shoes, to buy clothing, to buy cars, and to pay for my lifestyle.
But belt buckles.
I got my big old
70 Sam mud flaps.
Hey, by the way,
what Danny said there.
Well, I would like to make one point because I didn't get a chance to talk about the tele-advisors and Josh Brown and those other things very quickly. So Josh Brown comes on, and it's funny because in the business, professionals like us call us either he calls them drawdown Josh Brown or limit down Josh Brown. Kidding. You know, he always touts individual stocks. He always talks about how great they are. And he's never admitted that it was just for entertainment and that you're an idiot if you listen to him on TV. That's what he said. He actually admitted that in writing now after the fact. He never said that until it really hit the fan, until he was getting creamed and all these pie chart allocations that he's done are down. And then the reason he admitted that, Tim, he had to. He was caught and people were calling him out. And so now he said, well, you know, after the fact, and see, that's what's disingenuous. If you're not really going to buy that stock or you're not really going to agree with it or it's just marketing, you need to disclose that to people before you go on the air. The one thing I can't stand is in the, you got the guy on CNBC, the quote advisor that goes, I think you need to buy this stock. I don't own it. My family doesn't own it. My company doesn't own it. We don't own it. Well, by God, if you're touting that stock, I want you to be have some skin in the game. I mean, everything that we invest for clients, we buy right along with them. We invest, you know, I do, Don does, my parents do. I mean, well, my dad's deceased, but my mom, my family, we have skin in the game because we believe in it. It's either right or wrong.
It's interesting that you just said about diversification. I think you just mentioned the word diversification, and what popped in my head was this. Look at XLU. There is nowhere to hide in
this
market.
That's utilities, folks. That's utilities, yep. ETF.
I mean, 71 down to 50, you're like, well, that's not so bad. But look, the same sell rules, two closes below the 21, or here's a 200-day, right down here, this gold line. Like, you don't have to sell. There's nowhere to hide in this market. You don't have to buy things. By the way, where are all the nibblers? Oh, I'm just buying a little bit on the way down and a little bit more and a little bit more. And you're just averaging down. And like Campbell Soup, XL, the staples, right, Don? XLP, that'll save you. And I get it, 64 to 54. It's not that big of a deal, but it's still not a healthy chart.
Still 20%.
It's still, and it still represents risk.
Right. Well, here's the thing about diversification. So you've been told that if you get a pie chart based on your age and your station in life, that when it goes up, they go at different rates. And by the way, when it goes down, some things will go down and some things will go up and it'll offset it. It won't be so bad. Here's the thing, folks. They're lying. When it really gets ugly, correlations grow together. And they all go down together. The only place you can hide is maybe treasuries and gold. And by the way, when gold and treasuries act well together, because usually they're inversely correlated, that normally is times of fear. That's one big red flag. That's an indicator. If gold and treasuries are acting well together, you know, so there's only a few asset categories, including cash, that you should consider when it gets ugly like this. So my question to you is, how many times has your investor said, hey, you need to go to 50% cash or 70 or 80?
So many stocks that you've been told are defensive, and they're just garbage. PepsiCo here, Coke doesn't have a good looking chart. And look, a lot of folks might get the wrong impression here, and I want to be really clear that I think conviction kills your portfolio. Conviction kills your retirement. Being so convinced that the market's going to fall apart, you may be right, but you also leave yourself open to whipsaw and missing out on the opportunity. But if you're 100% invested, and this is what people don't understand, that the things that we do, if you're let me get something that we like better. There we go. If you're 100% invested and in your 401k or IRA, one, how do you nibble at anything on the way down, and how do you take advantage of when prices do fall, that you can take a lower risk entry in a docu? How does that work? It doesn't. And so these folks that they don't carry cash because they don't get paid on cash. That's the secret too, Danny, that no one realizes. That they say cash isn't a position because they don't get paid on cash. You know why? Because nobody's paying anyone to hold cash. The only thing that cash does is pay the person holding it, which is our clients. Cash is opportunity. It's a really big deal. Don, give me your thoughts on diversification.
Well, that's a great point that you brought up. When all these guys come on TV and say this pullback is a great buying opportunity, well, they're all in all the time. What are you going to buy it with if you're all in all the time, except maybe incremental additions that you're putting in to work in your 401k? So maybe less than a percent of your overall worth. If you never sold higher, you can't buy lower. O'Neill said it best, that diversification is a hedge for ignorance. We diversify across sectors. So that means that if we're 100% long, we're not 50% long software stocks. we're long, you know, some of the titans of industry. And then we might have 10% in software. We might have, you know, some Amazon, some Apple, some Netflix, and then some fiber optic stocks. And then maybe we'll have a couple of medical stocks. You diversify across sectors in a bull market. And when you break, I like to talk about as green light, yellow light, red light. It's no different than the trend gauge that I do in every one of the videos. If you're trending strongly above the 21-day moving average, it's a green light. You should be in all in and leading stocks. If you break below it and you're hanging out around the 50, that's a yellow light, maybe 50% long. If you get down to the 200, that's your last line of defense. That better hold. And if you break the 200, you better go to zero.
Or hit, you know, just a couple positions.
Or hedge.
Yeah. And it's so frustrating. And by the way, I want to be really clear here. Bonds, there's a bunch of really bad bonds out here. And I want to just touch on this for a moment and get Danny's thoughts as I look. I might have to dart off screen. Oh, no, I've got my notes. This is my note right here. Let's see. 576 firms have ceased their dividend worldwide, globally. And there are more bonds that have been downgraded to one grade lower, whether they were AAA, and now they're AA, they're B, or they've gotten downgraded to junk, than there have been right now. I believe the note I wrote down is from the Great Recession. Bonds aren't your safety. Danny, why do people have those onesies and twosies bonds and stock nerds? What we want you to do is be educated, because your friends who have their money managed, or your parents or your siblings, they get stuck with these closed-end REITs, they get stuck with these or private REITs. They get stuck with one bond or two bonds, and they don't understand why, or some mutual fund they've never heard of. Danny, can you explain all of that, please?
Well, so what a lot of advisors do, especially at the more, quote, upscale full brokerage firms like a Merrill or a Morgan Stanley or what have you, is if they give you a bond portfolio, so say you're a $1 million client, they'll give you $1 billion and you got $500,000 allocated to bonds. They'll give you individual bonds in your portfolio, which, so if you're doing 5% positions in each bond issue, that'll give you some diversification, right? Well, the problem is, so say you got $15,000 or $20,000 piece of one bond, which is, you know, 20 bonds. They trade in $1,000 increments, right?
Right.
Bonds are traded in multi-million dollar blocks. So $20,000 doesn't move the needle. So later, so they buy them and it's based on a spread. So they buy them and they kind of, a lot of times they'll split the spread with the underwriter, whoever it is, and they don't have to disclose that to you, but they sell it to you. And then they buy a big block, you know, $100 million, $50 million, and then they allocate it amongst all their clients. Now you've got a little $20,000 piece. Well, later, if you decide you need the money or you want to sell, or bonds are going down in value like they are now and you want to sell, they know damn good and well it's a distressed sale. So if you try to sell a little $20,000, $50,000, or even $100,000 bond piece, they're going to bend you over. They're going to widen the spread and make you pay to try to sell it. And if you own just three or four or five bonds, a $3,000 piece, $5,000 piece, man, you're toast. I mean, I had a client that
1 second, Danny, just save the story, because I think what you just said is so pertinent, because it ties into what you said about the REITs. The REITs aren't revalued or aren't repriced, but once a year. People think they have a $50,000 bond portfolio, which they can sell it for 50. They think they have a $50,000 closed-end REIT and they can sell it for 50. Their whole portfolio is mispriced, or a good portion of it.
Right. So this guy that transferred in, his bond was showing up on a statement at 108 because interest rates were low and there was a premium. There was a premium. Well, he actually sold it before he transferred in because he wanted to get rid of it. Well, when he called up to sell it, they gave him 99 for it, not even par. So that's a 9%, 8% hickey on what he thought, what they were showing on the bond price. I'll give you another one. If bonds aren't traded actively, so a lot of bonds, you know, they buy and they tell you to hold them to maturity, which that's a whole other topic. That's another lie. because the guys in New York up at the head, you know, the guy, head guys on Wall Street, they don't buy bonds to maturity. They actually trade them with the interest rate cycle. They're not trading them daily or monthly, but anyway. So these bonds, they're traded, and if you get caught holding these, they're not gonna get priced right. But if they don't trade for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, because they're not actively traded, they've already been issued a couple of years ago, then they don't have a live price. So if they don't have a recent price, they do what's called a matrix system. They assign a price to it based on some model. Well, guess who gets to determine that model? The brokerage firms kind of get to come up with a model that's gonna give you a favorable looking price for those bonds. But that's why when we do bonds, we use exchange traded funds that have a huge, huge pool of bonds, and you could trade it like a stock. I can just hit a button and sell the whole thing, and then I'll let the bond fund manager worry about whether they're good or not, or whether he gets caught in a liquidity trap. I want to be completely liquid with my bonds. And unless you have a couple million dollars, at least just allocated to bonds, you shouldn't be doing individual bonds. You shouldn't be doing mutual funds bonds because of the way they're structured, and there is no maturity date. There's no guarantee. You want to use exchange traded funds, bond ETFs, so that you can have the liquidity that you need and you can get out.
Okay, a couple of things here. But before I do that, I'm smiling for a reason, Danny. I need to apologize to you. But before I apologize to you, what I'm going to tell you is that there's so many on Twitter right now and going on TV telling you that they throw the word low cost in with their how they design a portfolio. Look, you could save yourself tonight. You could have the lowest core. Don, what? Dispel the myth of Bogleheads and Vanguard, please. I'll let you do it.
Vanguard created the least expensive way to lose 50% of your portfolio.
Fast. Look, they're great when it's going up, but when they're going down, you still lose money. You get what you pay for.
I actually think that this period in time has killed robo. And I don't know if we are in October of 2000. Don, when you look up, it looks like you're looking at Danny.
I'm looking at the market.
He's looking at Tribal. I was about to disclose that.
Screens behind me with all my charts.
I think you're looking up at Danny. It makes it more enjoyable. Like, oh, Don's looking up at Danny. That's great.
No, I was going to say that because my screen's a little bit different setup than yours, and I keep seeing Don look up to the left and the right and above, and I go, I know what he's looking at. He's got two big monitors, one on both sides. He's looking up while we're doing the show.
So, Danny, I want to apologize. I thought that was you banging the cap of your pen. Because Danny taps stuff during the show, but it's actually, if you look, I'm in my Tanya is 9 months pregnant, so we got the little girl's room done. It's the ceiling fan things going off behind me, like they're clicking. The chains are clicking. I just realized that when my mouse fell off. I'm standing at Nora's bookshelf, and anyway, it's a whole mess here. I've got notes, a microphone, my coffee cup. I'm trying not to spill in her room. It's the quietest room in the house right now.
By the way, you're talking about Betterment. I just got an email, like a spam email, whatever, from Betterment today. And it's talking about market experience and unprecedented volatility. And it's saying the market reaction. And then it says, you know, how is Betterment performing, right? And so they say, how are our primary holdings faring in this downturn? And they say, well, pretty much like the markets. I mean, we've got the VTI, the Vanguard Total Market, and we've got this. And so we're going along with the ride. So Betterment is a robo-advisor that's basically gotten slaughtered and gone down with the market. There is no sell discipline.
No. And
that came in a day, by the way.
There's nothing. Look, I just feel bad because there's so many people that have been 2008-ed. Well, they're halfway there. They're halfway to being 2008, but what's disgusting to me is that the same people that did it to them in 08 are going to do it to them again. And they're going to tell you that it's going to come back. Now the whole thing is you're hearing from the traditional advisor brotherhood. You're hearing duration and depth and duration. No longer is it about we're going to have a V-shaped recovery. You're hearing depth and duration. And our clients, and by the way, Danny wrote a masterful note, just a fact-based masterful note. If you want to get that note, what I want you to do, we're more than happy to send anything we do to you. It's 855-732-5932. Look, we don't have salespeople. You can email Danny. Absolutely email dan@revereasset.com. And we're happy to go over anything that we're doing. Because you know what? Even if you just want to talk and ask questions, don't sit there and stew. Don't sit there over the weekend thinking that, because what happens is everybody's at home, they're watching the news. It's bad. And you're consuming all this negativity. And you're going to miss opportunity. And by opportunity, I mean, you're going to miss opportunity to potentially stop yourself from going down. I'll tell you, it is my belief that if you go down to retest this low, that starts the move to another potential 25% leg lower. And it doesn't have to happen. But the thing is, to be stuck 100% invested right now, my heart goes out to you because you've only got one, you're at the bottom of a hole and you're looking up and you're just praying that someone comes and rescues you. And that's nowhere to be. And so my heart really goes out to folks that's what they've had is their whole nest egg. And unfortunately, 6 million of our coworkers in this country have filed for unemployment, 10 million in the last 2 weeks. And now they can't contribute to that 401k or IRA. And that's all they've got. And you need to be in preservation mode and strategically looking for opportunity. This market will bottom, my friends. This market will bottom. I'm telling you, this market will bottom when you stop looking for opportunity.
Right.
When you start thinking about preservation of wealth, which is our modus operandi all the time. And we do just fine. Not everything's an opportunity, even if it's a Zoom or a Teladoc or what's another stay-at-home stock? Campbell's Soup, Clorox. So many of you have gotten top-ticked and stuck. And my heart goes out to you. And look, there's a better way. 732-5932. Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, listen, when the markets go down, 75% of all stocks go down. Now, when it's like this, where it's really bad, like 08 or right now, the number's much higher. It's like 85, 90%. So it doesn't matter what the stock's name is. And look, and Tim was talking about all those stocks that have been incinerated, whether it's McDonald's, Starbucks. It's not that these aren't great companies or they won't come back. They'll be a great stock as an investment again. You've got to learn to distinguish and differentiate the stock to make you money and the company itself and the ongoing business, because they don't always move in tandem.
And you don't have enough money. There's a really good chance that you don't have enough money to buy enough shares to make that dividend your living wages. Like, I'm an investor in Coke. How much? Is it enough to buy a tank of gas?
Well, you just lost all your dividends for 15 years.
Well, that's the thing, right? When you look at the chart of Coke, you're 1,000% right. And so, look, the market is so difficult right now is the understatement. But the fact that people tell you that you have to take large losses to get big gains. I just, it's a lie.
Well, not only that,
it's an absolute lie.
Yeah, not only that, but if you had a sell discipline and you sold your Coke a while ago, not at the top, nobody's going to hit the top. Yeah. After it starts rolling over and sells off, and then it comes down quite a bit, and then you re-enter, guess what? Your dividend yield just got a whole lot higher.
Yeah. You're 1,000% right. All right, Don, let's do this. Give me two things you're looking for. I never did get your three. You know what? Let's do this. Give me what you're looking for next week. And then stock nerds and market lovers, here's what I'd love for you to do. Email Don. If you find it, you can email me, but I love the way Don describes it. You can call 855-732-5932. We pick up the phones on the weekends. No salespeople. Everything we do is word of mouth. But if you find yourself in that limbo, that anxious stage of the market where I've taken losses that I feel are unrecoverable, and if I leave now, surely it's going to go higher. And then you're wondering, well, if the next shoe drops, every time Dr. Fauci comes on TV, if you're wondering if what he says will take the market down another 25% and then give you 50%, 60% losses, because it's not, it's those are the indices that are going down. Individual stocks will go down 1.5 to 2 times more. And so if you find yourself there, I want you to email Don. Don, what are you looking for next week?
Look up the, bring up the SPY there on your chart, Tim.
You want the SPY or the futures?
The SPY.
You got it.
Look at that 4 days ago, reversal of the downtrending 21-day exponential moving average right there. That was a big screaming short. Clear off your marker, please. And then as if that wasn't screaming loud enough, look at the last 3 days. The high is right around that declining 8-day exponential moving average, the darker line.
Yep.
The first thing the market needs to do is get back above that, for bulls, is get back above that downtrending 8 EMA. If it does, then it's going to take on the 21 EMA. And if it fails there, the bulls are still in control. You need to get back above the 8.
The bears.
Yes. Yeah. You need to get back above the 8 first and then the 21 for the market to be considered making any sort of an attempt at being a healthy market.
Can I add one thing on that? If you look on the, if you look on those charts, you look at all those moving average charts, the slope of the line, they're all negative. And not only that, so that there's a second derivative of the slope of the line. It's called the rate of change of the slope. So until the line starts to flatten out a little bit where it's starting to move horizontal, you really should, that means it's still risky. That's still in a downward trend. Only when it flattens out does that mean it's starting to stabilize. Once you see it curl up slightly, that's going to be a, at least your risk is reduced for an entry point, even if it's a little bit higher. So until those lines start to flatten out or even curl up, it's a very dangerous time. Just means risk is high.
So Danny, here's what we'll do. I'll give you, I'll tell you what, do the ending of the show and then I'll do the credits. And then you can say goodbye to folks.
I'd like to make one more comment because I ran across a piece today, and it was talking about Bank of America was pausing their financial advisors training and putting them on phones for customer service and for small businesses to answer the phones, their financial advisors. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, does that mean they're really financial advisors to begin with? Have they had the formal education or the experience for 20 years actively reading books and trading, or are they just salespeople that are being groomed and trained what to say? Just a thought. Sure. All right, folks. Listen, if you like what you heard, please tell a friend, tell a neighbor. You can just go to revereasset.com and you can sign up for our daily market insight. Or you can, or this podcast, you just put your email address in. We won't bug you, and it'll get automatically sent in your inbox every morning, every day after the market closes. And this podcast usually comes in Saturday, midday or morning, depending on when our producer can get it done. And you can also always call us old school at 855 Real Wealth.
All right, stock nerds and market lovers. Look, there's a ton of new people that listen to our video, watch our videos, listen to our podcast. And markets don't have to be argumentative. But when you make a sell decision or you want to continue to hold an ETF or an equity, nowhere in that decision comes price to earnings. Nowhere do you ever want to say the words book value. You make all decisions based on the chart. And the reason why you do that is because price is the ultimate clue. Price is what people think of it. And these things, although they're from numbers that come from the earnings statements are old. They're a quarter behind. You're going to leave yourself in a lurch because just because you believe these things, you're now subject to your opinion. And in a market like this, in a market anytime, it doesn't matter. The people that matter are the people that control the market. And so a lot of stock nerds and market lovers, they understand what we do. That's why they're with us. That's why they follow us every week. But it's your parents and your loved ones I know that you're concerned about. And so, look, this isn't a machismo. This isn't a right or wrong. This is just what has to be for you to survive what potentially could be an onslaught of financial Armageddon. I hope it's not that. Danny, we all hope it's not that. We're not bears. Like, there's people out there cheering the destruction of the markets and with I told you so's. That ain't us.
And they've been saying that for 5 years, too.
Yeah, and that ain't us. What we all want is for everybody to work, everybody who wants a job to have one, and for this economy to roar. But right now, hope is a really difficult strategy for the markets. Hope is a great way to live with optimism in your heart, but hope is not for the markets right now. And if you find yourself in that position that you just, you're locked up, don't sit alone, even if you just want to talk. I've had a number of people DM me on Twitter, and I've offered, hey, just call me if you want to talk. I don't care. We can talk. Don, we can talk about anything. So have you been following me? Don, have you seen my Twitter account, Don?
Of course.
Yeah. So
anything,
Don,
in particular? I love the pig. Gist that you send out.
Oh yeah. Every morning. That's how I say good morning to the community. But this, Don, this right here is here something that I call affectionately Wax at Night. Now, Tanya doesn't like that title. She says it means something else, and I don't know what she's talking about. But this Saturday night, to lighten the mood for stock nerds and market lovers, what we have here, Don, is a pack of 1991 Fleer baseball cards. We're gonna unwax those on.
Where are you getting these?
eBay.
And the gum, they're never opened, and the gum is still in them.
Yeah, like, as a matter of fact, here's what I love sports cards. There's a friend, Mark, who's a Twitter friend. There you are. He's a Twitter friend, and he super nice guy. We started talking sports cards a while ago, and then this whole quarantine thing, I'm like, wow, I'm not that hour or two. I 2 hours of driving a day with Remster, you know, going to work in daycare. I have now found a way to buy 1990 Fleer basketball cards. I got a whole box of them, two boxes. And so I'm just hunting for Jordan. Now, this came in the other night, 1991 Upper Deck Inaugural Edition basketball cards. Super stoked. Now, look, my friends, if you go to Target, let's look at Target stock real quick. Is Target, how's Target faring? TGT. Ah, boy, is that... That looks like a crocodile's death roll. You don't want to be in Target for the stock, my friends. You want to be in Target for this. This is like your wife sent you to the store for toilet paper. Come back with magic beans. That's what this is. It actually says card chase. It means you're not going to get anything worth a dime in here. But it's okay because it's fun. And I'll tell you, Saturday night, we'll open up a couple more packs. But Don, to answer your question, 1989 Topps baseball with the gum.
Oh man!
Oh, absolutely. Hold on a second. Off screen.
I can still taste that gum.
At least it wasn't All-Star wrestling cards.
Now, you know what? Those cards are really pricey. Like Wendy Richter, Big John Studd. Those cards. The Animal, George the Animal Steel, Brett the Hitman Hart, the Hart Foundation. Oh, damn.
Captain Lou Albano.
Those cards are worth money. Go on eBay, completed sales.
I had to open my mouth.
Now, look at this. In here is a mystery box of cards. There's four boxes. We'll do that too. We'll do that on Saturday night too. Well, yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to hurt your feelings. I'm not sure what I'll be doing Saturday night, but I can assure you I will be not watching you open baseball cards.
I bet you there's going to be babies made to the sound of me unwrapping wax packages and going through baseball cards. Absolutely.
Don's going to be having more fun because the kids are out of the house. I think. Are they back?
I got one back from school. Yep.
Oh, that's, yep. Yeah.
That's right. I haven't seen the grandkids in 3 weeks. That's brutal.
Yeah.
Look, there's nothing. There's nothing on Netflix. I started doing this because I couldn't find anything to watch on TV. So I asked Tanya to hold the camera, and I said, "We're gonna just broadcast me opening up cards."
What about Tiger King? Yeah, haven't you watched that?
No, I can't get into that stuff, man.
Then don't say there's nothing to watch on Netflix. There is something to watch on
Netflix.
There's
nothing to watch on Netflix. I am must-see TV.
I know Dan doesn't know who Tiger King is.
Dan has no clue. Although Danny did watch, you know, the last series that I watched, I thought that was really good, was Chernobyl.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you sending really me the DVD for that. Tim got me that DVD and it was awesome.
Yeah, that show. That was only 5 episodes though. And then like
Ozark's back. Haven't you watched Ozark?
Yes. Yeah, we were recorded. It just came back on last. It's a weird show.
Ozark's fantastic.
Yeah. Tanya can watch a bunch of shows. I can't. I can't get into them. I like The Markets.
Billions will be back on soon.
You know what? I've got like 5 episodes into it. I hear that's. I would like to continue it, but I've got too much energy to sit there. And then, what's that other show? Succession. I hear that's really good.
I haven't watched that.
Yeah, and I want to do that. I'm just not cool, man. But what is cool are baseball and sports cards, and we should open them together Saturday night. You know what? It's 9 o'clock Central is where it's at.
Okay.
Those 156 viewers, tell you what, they knew what was up the other night. Tanya says to me, "You're going to do this every night?" I'm like, "No." Is no the right answer?
Yes. Yes, no is the right answer.
So, all right, stock nerds and market lovers, listen, we love you. We know how hard this is. Listen, don't sit there. Don't sit there wondering. Just please, just call 732-5932. Ask your questions. You can be cantankerous with us. We're definitely an ear that will listen to you. With that, we'll see you next week on Your Money.